It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this episode of Senior Talk. Today, we are going to discuss the role of a hospice physician. Full disclosure, I didn't even realize that hospice care had its own physicians. I knew all about the nursing staff and volunteers, but I thought that the person's primary care provider had oversight on the whole hospice experience. So if you, like me, had no idea about this, we are both going to learn something today. My guest is Dr. Megan DeRozier. She is the medical director of the Gentiva Hospice Bangor branch and is a board-certified family medicine physician with more than 15 years of clinical experience. She got her Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine from the University of New England and completed her residency at Eastern Maine Medical Center. She also served as an osteopathic family physician in the United States Air Force. Thank you for your service, including a deployment to Afghanistan during Operation Enduring Freedom. And she holds additional board certification in medical acupuncture. She has focused her clinical practice in nursing homes throughout the greater Bangor area. Her clinical specialties include family medicine, geriatric care, hospice and palliative medicine, and she has a strong interest in chronic disease management, preventive care, and end-of-life support. Dr. DeRozier, thank you very much for being here. I think this will be a great show, and I'm excited to learn all about what you do. Were you surprised when I said I really didn't know that hospice had doctors? Am I out of the loop, or is that something you hear when someone is starting to think about hospice care?
Well, I think we're a well-kept secret. So every hospice agency has a hospice physician. Some have more than one, and some of us act as a medical director and a hospice physician as one. But we are the supports behind the nurses and the other staff. We are on call 24/7 as a hospice physician, and we're called, you know, to help with symptom management any time of the day. So I think we're just, you know, obviously there's Medicare regulations that the hospice physicians have to fulfill, which is outside of the primary care's responsibilities. But I think the bigger part of that is like creating a team that knows that they have a resource that can be utilized 24/7 to keep patients comfortable.
So given that that is your role, what is the role of the primary care provider if someone is at this stage? And does the primary care provider say, I think it's time for hospice, and now you're going to go talk to a hospice care doctor? How does that work, and how do they transition to you, or do they?
So what happens when the PCP, or there's a discussion about maybe entering into hospice and utilizing that Medicare benefit, every family is allowed hospice agency of choice. And so there's a visit called the hospice informing visit, which is where the family really gets to really interview the hospice agencies that they're interested in. And I often would advocate for families to do that, only because everyone has a fit and fits a little bit different with different personalities. And there's services that some agencies provide that others don't have the support for. And so the hospice informing visit is usually the first visit where someone like Melanie would go in and talk about Gentiva Hospice, what it would look like, how we bring the care to them wherever they are, and they can just leave it, and it's non-obligatory at that visit. But if they do decide to go ahead with Gentiva, then there's an admission nurse who comes and does the admission visit. And I work closely with the admission nurse, reviewing every patient who gets admitted to hospice, so that, you know, we have to have a certifying diagnosis that meets the hospice criteria. During that process, patients can elect to keep their primary care provider. You know, it's a little unfortunate. We don't have as much continuity of care in family medicine anymore, just because it seems like there's a lot of turnover. But for some lucky people, they do have that relationship and continuity. And it helps, it gives them reassurance to be able to continue having that relationship. And so I can be involved and help out with the hospice side of things as far as orders, or, and the primary care provider can be as involved as they want to be. And if they want to step back and have me more actively manage, that's possibilities as well. So it's very collaborative. It depends really on the patient and the PCP. And we try to make what's going to be the most comfortable situation for the patient.
Is this ultimately the patient's decision where they can say, I really want Dr. DeRozier, or I want to stay with my primary care? Is it really up to them?
It is. Yep. So I will be, a hospice physician will be involved regardless. It's just to the degree of active management, really. So, and that can change, you know, had people who have kept their PCPs and then for one reason or another, they transition to having me more actively involved in managing medications and symptom management. So it's, there's really no wrong answer. It's just what feels the best for the patient and the family.
Is there ever a disagreement between the hospice physician and the primary care physician with regards to maybe they're suggesting hospice, but maybe the patient really isn't there? They're not. I ask this because I recently had this situation where a friend of mine, the doctor put her on hospice and she was having none of it. And they found a specialist and she's doing amazingly well, has a brand new treatment. But it made a huge difference. And so I'm wondering, is there ever that case where you say, I don't think you're ready for hospice?
It does happen. And I think that's where it's really great to be able to have that conversation between two providers, because we're able to talk our language, if you would. Sometimes the PCPs, you know, there have been times, and it's happened both ways. There have been times where the admission nurse will present a patient to me and it doesn't sound like they're necessarily hospice appropriate. And then talking, then I would, you know, get in touch with the PCP and talking to them. There's information that they can share with me that is, you know, more compelling and, you know, they're able to give more details. So sometimes that clinical history is really imperative to be able to share between the hospice physician and the PCP. And then there's other times where, you know, we get referrals from PCPs and we, as the hospice group, find that they're maybe not quite ready for hospice. And we can always have that conversation with the PCP and absolutely like be willing to become involved in the future when they're ready.
When you say hospice appropriate, can you define that for people who maybe don't understand exactly what hospice is and does, that it isn't necessarily you are at death's door?
Yeah, I think the most confusing thing about hospice is we also have this other word and sort of section of medicine called palliative care. And sort of trying to figure out the difference between the two is sometimes really difficult. And a lot of times the words hospice and palliative care come into play when someone has a diagnosis or something's going on with their bodies, their health, that it would not be surprising if their life expectancy was less than 6 months, if things progressed in a natural manner. So that's not to say that everyone who comes on in hospice only lives for 6 months. We have people who live longer than that. And I think that that is, you know, those patients who remain on hospice for some time, not days or weeks, they are able to benefit from that relationship that's built between the nurses and the staff and the chaplains and the aides. So back to your question, though. So hospice is really looking at quality of life. Hospice brings the care to the patient. We are no longer like trying to chase numbers or chase scans. We're just looking at the patient in their environment and that day trying to manage what are they feeling, how can we make them feel better. Palliative care is a little bit more focused on someone who may have a disease process that's not curable, but is still wanting to be somewhat aggressive with their care, whether it's chemotherapy, whether it's ongoing lab work, hospitalizations. They're still wanting to actively manage their disease, not just the symptoms. Palliative care comes into play to help manage symptoms while also trying to still actively manage a disease process.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like you to discuss a little bit of the training and education that goes into being an end-of-life provider, a hospice provider, as opposed to a PCP. Stay with us. We'll be right back right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing hospice physicians. We have Dr. Megan DeRozier here, and Melanie Pomeroy is also with Gentiva. She's off in the background and may or may not join us. So I wanted to talk about the special training because we did discuss the hospice physicians do work with primary care physicians. Whether the patient really, if they want to stay with either one, that's fine, whatever they want to do. But in the background, you do work with them for the benefit of the patient. What is the training that or education that goes into being a hospice physician? Do you have extra training that you do?
Yeah, so I, like you had mentioned, I did my residency and formal training in family medicine. That brought me to being a PCP and then a hospitalist. And I think, the deciding point for me and where I really started getting into hospice and palliative care was when my mom was diagnosed with ALS. And it was just a very hard process for her coming to terms with that diagnosis. Well, for all of us, really, and just the difficulty that she had through that. So, shortly after she passed, I did a hospice and palliative care fellowship, and so that's a year-long process, a year-long fellowship, which gives you sort of the specialization in these different aspects of hospice and palliative care. Really looking at symptom management, knowing how to, convert different medications and dosing, and but also just how to have difficult conversations. That's a big part of our fellowship training was, being able to talk to people about the things that nobody wants to talk about and doing it in a way that they feel like they're being heard and that their values are still being maintained and that they're not being pushed into anything. Hospice isn't about giving up. It's, more about being able to put your priorities together and get the value out of the days that you have, and make, as many good memories and be in a place where you want to be, rather than having to be in the, some people have to be in a nursing home, but if you can come home or if you, wherever your picture of how you would want the end of your life to be, we try to make that happen as much as possible. And so I think after doing my hospice and palliative care fellowship, I entered into the nursing home environment and sort of fell in love with that world. I just love, being able to take the time to listen to people's stories. I'm entering into their home and every day, and I try to treat that with respect. And I view myself as a visitor into their world, and I don't try. And so just being able to, build those relationships in the nursing homes is wonderful. That often overlays into hospice quite frequently just because of the trajectory of people's illnesses and aging. So, being able to preserve that dignity and just really be there. I think sometimes presence is such a wonderful thing.
You said something really poignant. You said it during the break, and you just said it again, that hospice isn't about giving up. Is that a myth that people have when someone says, "Well, I think it's time we call hospice," that they suddenly feel like they have a death sentence now and they're going to lay on the couch and wait?
I think it's Probably the majority, unfortunately. And I think people who are able to experience hospice can appreciate how different that is. But the problem is that you don't really know until you're in it. And, you know, I think there's a lot we can do in medicine now. And I talk to patients a lot and, you know, sometimes because we can do something doesn't mean we should do something. You know, we have to look at the person as a whole and what has their body been through and how much can they handle? How much are they thriving? Are they still having good days? You know, these, I think, are like the big things we have to look at in trying to figure out, and the patient really, and the family trying to, if their goals are more, you know, just trying to improve the quality of life, then sometimes going to the ER in the middle of the night and getting put into a room and then a hospital room and then IVs and IV sticks is more distressing than it is helpful. And if we can be able to have the resources to provide that, all of the care that they need to be comfortable, but they can stay at home where their families are, sometimes that is a much better ending for people. And it's not so much about giving up, but it's about allowing your priorities to take control instead of, you know, your disease taking control.
We are just about out of time. When we come back, I know that Melanie wants to add something, and I'm going to give you that chance when we come back. We will be right back. Much more to come. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing hospice providers, doctors. Melanie Pomeroy is also here. I mentioned earlier that she is in the background, and Dr. DeRozier mentioned her as well. She is an RN, and she's the hospice care consultant with Gentiva. And Melanie, you raised your hand. You wanted to say something as Dr. DeRozier was finishing up her thought right before break. So share with me what your thought was.
I just wanted to share a statistic. On average, the last year of somebody's life, they will be in and out of the hospital 7 different times. They'll be sent to a skilled nursing facility 3 times. They will be sent home from that skilled nursing facility twice with home health care before anybody broaches the subject of hospice. And that is because we're looking at keeping people on a recovery trajectory when sometimes they're actually on more of a decline trajectory. And like Dr. DeRozier was talking about, our conversation is centered around, what do you want? Do you want to continue to go this route and go to the hospital and the skilled nursing facility? Or do you want to be in your home environment and manage your symptoms, manage your shortness of breath, manage your pain, and be in your home and not have to go back to the hospital? That is what really drives my conversation when I'm talking with people.
How does someone get to that point? So someone must broach hospice with them and then they make the decision. Do you have people who maybe have a provider who say, oh, I think we can do a million things, and the person just doesn't want to do that anymore and says, I want to go on hospice. I want the time I have left to be quality. Do you have that happen?
So I get, you know, I'm in doctor's offices and skilled nursing facilities, long-term care facilities, where we're doing a lot of education about that decline trajectory and talking about when you're spending all of your time getting this aggressive treatment, going to the hospital, doing the things, or, you know, would you rather do the other option? And that's how we start talking about, that's what hospice is. We're not about giving up. We're about having your best day. How do we have the best today? And that's when you can breathe well, when your pain is managed. And that's where our nurses and our doctors are experts in that symptom management. We circle the conversation around that, around the symptom management rather than the curative process.
Is there a criteria for getting on to a hospice program? Is it just you have probably 6 months or so and that's it? That's all you need to call in somebody on hospice? And how is hospice paid for?
You have to have a chronic life-limiting condition that you no longer want to seek aggressive treatment for, with a prognosis of an expected less than 6 months. Nobody has a magic crystal ball. We don't know if you're going to pass away in 6 months. Some people, as you said, will graduate from hospice. They'll get a little bit better. They're not declining anymore. They'll come off hospice. If they're continuing to decline, and decline can be subtle, They're eating less. They've lost a little weight. They're falling more. Their pain medicine needs to be adjusted frequently. They're, you know, more short of breath. Those are declines, and that would qualify somebody to be able to continue with their hospice benefit. You get 180 days at a time that is renewable with no expiration. Hospice is covered by Medicare 100%, and it covers the nurses, the aide, the social worker, the chaplain, having the medical director. It will have the volunteer as well. It covers durable medical equipment. If you need a hospital bed, oxygen, a bedside commode, a wheelchair, a walker, all of those things are covered under your hospice Medicare benefit, as well as incontinence supplies. So that can be a big thing for people as well. They'll cover briefs and wipes and barrier creams and that sort of thing, all covered under the Medicare benefit.
We have about 30 seconds left. Is there anything, Dr. DeRozier, that you would like to add in final thoughts?
Sure. I think it's just important for families to not have any regret. And that's often how I start these conversations, is that you want to know that they have done everything that they can. And often it's just about reflecting on what people have been through and everything that they have done. And when you sit down and take the time to listen to their whole story, you can often realize that they've gone above and beyond, or you can give it some more time and just know that, let the families know that you'll be there either way. But if, you know, the expectations of getting better isn't in line with what the body's going to do, then, you know, we are here to help support them in that way, whether it's hospice or whether it's, you know, another sort of palliative approach. But I think hospice really helps with bringing the family together, giving that gift of time back to patients, and it takes away the busyness of, you know, everything in the medical world.
Dr. DeRozier, Melanie, thank you both so much for being here. It was a lot of information, and I really appreciate it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.